Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Die Glocke, Nazi Wunderwaffe. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. In part two of our Hitler series, I briefly mentioned Die Glocke, a Nazi secret project from the 1940s that remains shrouded in secrecy to this very day. Well, I had quite a few messages about this subject, so I wanted to produce an episode that dug a little deeper into the mystery. Well, this is that episode. I also had a listener reach out in person to share his enthusiasm for this subject. So, Tom, this is for you, my friend. An Einstein-Rosen bridge is, in simplistic terms, a wormhole. Professor of theoretical physics at the City College of New York and the SUNY Graduate Center, Mikio Kaku, commented in 2015 that wormholes are taken very seriously indeed. They seem like the stuff of science fiction. We have seen them in Marvel movies, Interstellar, Doctor Who, and dozens of other out-there fables. But the reality is that mathematically, wormholes have been proven to be entirely factual and a very real phenomenon. They exist, and they've been extrapolated mathematically from Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity, which he published in 1915, 110 years ago, so a long while back. Now, the general theory of relativity is somewhat at odds with quantum mechanics and quantum physics. They essentially don't quite play together in their entirety. So when you talk about the grand unified theory, so what I'm essentially discussing here is to scientifically and mathematically break down everything on the quantum level. So with that, the grand unified theory of everything must account for all the forces that are known to exist. But the problem scientists currently have is that gravity, which can be mathematically predicted, but at the same time doesn't seem to exist on a provable spectrum. But obviously we know it's there. Then there is time. It does not explain time either. So ergo, if it doesn't explain everything, it's not a grand unified theory of everything. So there is more work to do. Now, here's another thing about the general theory of relativity. And bear with me, I'm trying to explain all of this in the most basic of layman's terms. On January the 8th, 2017, what was considered the biggest scientific breakthrough in quite some time happened. Well, that was the proof of the existence of gravitational waves being discovered. Do you remember that? It was fairly big news in science circles at the time, and even made the mainstream news cycles, if I remember correctly. There was no scientific proof of gravitational waves up until that point. We suspected they existed, sure, but it was just conjecture. It was pretty amazing when you consider that Einstein theorized those waves back in 1915. Well, Einstein's theory of general relativity can be tested thoroughly now. The reason I'm pointing this out is because I wanted to make it clear that even the idea of a wormhole that seems really exotic is actually firmly based in science and fact, and that's an important thing to consider in this episode. I believe it was the British physicist Michael Faraday that realized that if you compress gas into a tube and then let it expand, then it will get cold. That's essentially the basis for modern refrigeration. You see, you have a compressor which contains freon gas, and the refrigerator motor compresses that in shifts, thus allowing the gas to expand, meaning it gets colder and chills the fridge. So that's really how that works. Now Faraday, when he discovered how gas behaved upon compression, well, he wasn't able to explain it through mathematical equation. For the most part, Faraday wasn't very good at math, In fact, he was famously stated to be mathematically illiterate. I totally sympathise with him. I hate math too. But just because Faraday couldn't prove his gas compression theory mathematically didn't mean that he wasn't taken seriously and that the theory wasn't considered factual. Well, we don't have a machine that can generate wormholes currently, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. We know they're out there. Which brings us full circle back to Professor Mikio Kaku, who explains in his 2021 book titled The God Equation, The Quest for the Theory of Everything, that we exist in a multiverse. He explains this whilst using string theory, which suggests infinite universes exist as membranes in higher dimensions, with our universe being one of these vibrating membranes. Electrons jump between these membranes, which potentially explains phenomena like dark matter and offering pathways through black holes to other dimensions of reality. Not to mention the possibility for explaining much of the unexplained phenomena that we discuss on this show. Brian Greene, John Ellis, Roger Penrose, Brian Cox, and a multitude of other notable physicists also share this view based on what string theory tells us. The experts take it very seriously, because the idea is that if our universe is just one so-called bubble, sitting amongst an infinite number of bubbles, and we live on the skin of said bubble, then it's theoretically just a short hop through a tube into the next universe or bubble, right? Which is another reality, another existence, or another dimension, however you want to phrase it. But here's the tricky thing about wormholes. We can't necessarily go through them, because they're essentially black holes. When you try to go through a black hole, when any matter goes into a black hole, well, it doesn't come out. At least, not that we have seen or been able to work out. Scientists have seen plenty of things go into black holes, but as we have never seen the other side of a black hole, we can't definitely say how or if things come out of the other side. We think they can, but we can't prove it scientifically. Yet. Black holes are so heavy and dense that they rip a hole in the space-time fabric itself, whatever that is made of. These are extreme cutting-edge physics that we are talking about, on a very basic level, as I said. Something the size of a massive solar star collapsing into something that's maybe the size of a football, for example. And how we go about proving that with mathematics so that we can control it or generate it. Neil deGrasse Tyson, the American astrophysicist who spends most of his time trying to turn himself into some kind of quasi-influencer these days, has a great explanation of what would happen to you physically if you went through a wormhole. He stated that your body and all of the molecules that make up your being would stretch out like fine spaghetti as you went through it. Which poses the question, how does the black hole, or indeed, we, put all of those molecules back together, as they should be, at the other end? So what happens? Is it even plausible, or possible? Well, there's one way you might be able to go through. The edge of the black hole, which is called the event horizon, well, you cannot turn back from that point. But there is a theory proposed by Adam Getchell from the University of California that he published in 2003 that suggests that you could banish the event horizon. You could do this, the mathematics suggest, by using what is called exotic matter, which is defined as matter that has a negative mass energy density. I don't really understand what this means in any great detail. But I looked it up. An example of a field with a negative energy density is a gravitational field. Getchell's same paper also stated that, quote, there is nothing fundamental in physics which prevents the existence of exotic matter. Considering quantum field theory, general relativity, and topology, we have found that exotic matter is not ruled out by energy conditions. So, before I get way too deep into this wormhole here, pun intended, my point is that there are scientists out there currently, some who I've named here, who will tell you that, according to extrapolations from Einstein's general theory of relativity, it is possible to build a transversible wormhole. We just need to work out how to create and manipulate the exotic matter that will allow us to cross the bridge. I'm talking about exotic matter being connected to exotic mass, which also might be another theoretical connection to dark matter, which we know is quote-unquote there. In fact, it's all around us. The reason I'm bringing all of this up is to make the point that there is a whole lot more that we don't know compared to what we do know about the universe around us. But also that the type of science that we are diving into tonight, well, it potentially falls neatly into this very area that I have discussed here. And I guess I just wanted to remind you guys that there was a time when people were convinced the world was flat, and some still are. And also a time when people also thought that the sun revolved around the earth. So I just want you to keep in mind that just because you haven't seen proof of something yourself yet, well, that doesn't mean that it definitely doesn't exist. But also, before you rule something out as science fiction, remember that there is a considerable amount of science fact, and also many current great thinkers, who now postulate that what we are about to discuss is actually scientific reality. In the final days of the Second World War, as Allied forces encircled and ultimately closed in on Nazi Germany, there began to emerge whispers of a weapon being produced by German scientists that was so advanced, so revolutionary, that it could have changed the course of the war and the entire world after it. Because deep within the Owl Mountains of Lower Silesia in southwestern Poland, hidden inside a labyrinth of concrete tunnels, a facility known as Project Risa lies a mystery that defies the laws of physics and the boundaries of human morality. They call it Die Glocke, German for the bell. To some, it was considered the ultimate, quote, Wunderwaffe, or wonder weapon, a top secret Nazi weapon program whose aim was to create a device capable of warping time, conquering gravity, and cementing a thousand-year Reich. To many, the details of Die Glocke project is nothing more than a ghost story born from the ruins of the Second World War. But to others, to journalists and investigators, there is enough evidence there for us to look closer. As the Red Army closed in, and the masterminds, scientists, technicians, and engineers behind the project vanished, seemingly into thin air, what was left behind was a trail of strange blueprints, unexplained experiments, mysterious objects and artifacts, and a legacy of radiation that lingers to this very day. But how much of the Nazi bell is documented history, and how much of it is just a fever dream of a dying regime? A regime that pinned a lot of hope on the extremes of their beliefs and supernatural faith. Tonight, we descend into the concrete darkness to ring a bell that was never meant to be heard. Some of you might consider tonight's episode to be nothing more than rumours and legend born out of the Second World War, pseudoscience and mythical hubbub. Though some of you will consider it a closely guarded and scientific secret that has been kept under wraps for more than 80 years. Tonight's episode sounds like something from an Indiana Jones movie. So let's crack that whip and get down to business. But before I get ahead of myself, let's start at the very beginning, an overview, if you will. In what is now Poland, the Nazis allegedly conducted experiments on a device known as Die Glocke, the bell. This is the story of one of history's most enigmatic and controversial technological mysteries. But the story of the Nazi Bell doesn't begin in 1945, but rather in the year 2000. Polish military journalist and author Igor Witkowski published a book titled, quote, Prada und Wunderwaffe, or The Truth About the Wonder Weapon. In this book, Witkowski claimed that during extensive research into Nazi activities in Second World War Poland, he had discovered classified transcripts from an interrogation of former SS officer Jakub Sorensberg. Sorensberg was a Nazi party politician and devout member of the SS. His rank was that of SS Gruppenführer and General Lieutenant der Polizei. During the Second World War, he was the SS leader in Minsk and Lublin, both now part of present-day Poland. Sorensberg oversaw Operation Harvest Festival, which resulted in the deaths of between 40 to 43,000 Jews. He would stand trial in Poland after the war, where he was convicted of war crimes, and in 1950 was subsequently sentenced to death, following which he was executed in December of 1952. Witkowski, through extensive research into many then-unseen Polish secret war archives, discovered lengthy interrogation documents related to Sorensberg after his arrest. These documents revealed the existence of a top-secret project conducted under the codename Kronos, or Lantern Bearer. Now, a small side note here. In ancient Greek religion and mythology, Kronos was the leader and youngest of the Titans, the deities who preceded the Olympians. They were the children of Gaia and Uranus, the personification of the earth and the sky. Kronos overthrew his own father Uranus and ruled during the Golden Age until he suffered a similar fate and was overthrown by his own son Zeus, where he was subsequently imprisoned in Tartarus, the deep abyss that would be the dungeon of torment and suffering for the Titans. Kronos is also the personification of time in Greek mythology. Kronos, as the personification of time, is frequently confused with the Titan, though they are separate entities. During the Renaissance between the 14th to 17th centuries, the iconography of Father Time wielding the harvesting scythe became widespread and commonplace for Kronos. Greco-Roman mosaics depict him as a man turning the zodiac wheel. He's a symbol of cyclical time, most often portrayed as an old callous man with a thick grey beard, personifying the destructive and stifling aspects of time. I think both depictions of Kronos are important here. Anyway, the Nazi Kronos project centered around a large bell-shaped device that was being developed in an underground research facility known as Der Riese. This was near the huge Wenceslas mines in the Our Mountains. The location was perfect for such a clandestine operation. The Our Mountains were already home to a vast network of underground complexes, part of the Nazi secret Der Riese facility. The rugged terrain, combined with the existing tunnel systems, provided the perfect cover for the Third Reich's most sensitive research. But what exactly was this bell-shaped device, and why has it captured the imagination of researchers, conspiracy theorists, and historians for over two decades? Well, to understand the Nazi Bell, we must first understand the desperate situation that Germany found itself in during the final years of the war. You see, by 1943, the tide of World War II had turned against Nazi Germany. They defeated Stalingrad, the Allied invasion of Italy, and the relentless bombing campaigns over German cities by British and American air forces made it clear that conventional warfare would not secure a victory for the Nazis. In response, and perhaps in an element of desperation, the Nazi regime poured enormous resources into developing what they referred to as, quote, Wunderwaffe, or wonder weapons, exotic and unconventional weaponry that would hopefully turn the tide for the Germans. These were not simply fantasies or propaganda exercises. The Germans made real breakthroughs, far, far more advanced than their adversaries and decades ahead of other nations at the time. Examples being the V-1 flying bomb, the V-2 ballistic missile, the Messerschmitt ME-262 jet fighter, the Heliobeam orbital laser weapon, suborbital rocket bomber, and even designs for intercontinental ballistic missiles to support their advanced nuclear weapon program, or Uranverein. The Nazis also researched sonic weaponry, directed energy weapons, and advanced rocketry that wouldn't be matched for almost four decades. These projects were grounded in real science, although there were some others that ventured into the realm of pseudoscience, born out of the Nazis' mystical beliefs. But it was within this context of frantic innovation and increasingly fantastical weapon programs that Die Glocke allegedly emerged. According to the accounts, this wasn't just another rocket or jet engine. This was something that challenged the very laws of physics as understood at the time. The Nazi regime had proven itself capable of developing revolutionary weapons tech. They'd created the first human-made object to reach space, after all. If they could achieve that, then what else might they have been working on in their secret underground facility? Well, according to Witkowski's research into Second World War documentation, Die Glocke was a super-advanced device which measured approximately 9 feet wide and between 12 to 15 feet high. The device was made of a hard, heavy metal and shaped like a bell, hence its name. I'll add an artist's impression of the bell in the description of this episode to give you an idea of how this thing looked. The outer casing was allegedly covered in a ceramic material, whilst inside the bell there were two counter-rotating cylinders that contained a developed substance that Nazi scientists referred to as, quote, Zerum-525. The substance was said to be a sort of violet-coloured mercury-like liquid, which was said to be highly radioactive, unstable, and extremely dangerous. The cylinders within the device would spin in opposite directions at high speed during the experiments. The bell reportedly required enormous amounts of electrical power to operate. Some accounts even suggest that it needed its own dedicated on-site power plant. Now, when activated, the bell allegedly emitted a pale blue glow and produced a deep humming sound which vibrated strongly and could be felt as well as heard. The area around it would become freezing cold and a strange crystalline substance would form on nearby surfaces. But perhaps the most disturbing and intriguing aspects of the bell experiments were the effects that the device had on living tissue. According to the documents which Witkowski discovered, the first test subjects within the program development were plants and animals, and the results were horrific. Test subjects, it's documented, would decompose into a black, slime-like substance within hours of exposure. Scientifically speaking, we know that extreme chemical reaction involving concentrated sulfuric acid and highly radioactive substances like uranium can act as a powerful dehydrating agent. When they react with carbohydrates like sugar or living cells, it removes water molecules, leaving behind a black, carbon-rich mass if water is present. Later experiments allegedly involved human test subjects, prisoners from nearby concentration camps forced into experimentation. At least five of the scientists working on the project were documented to have died during the experiments. The official cause of death varied, but all seemed to relate to exposure to whatever radiation or energy the bell was producing. The bell was allegedly tested in a specially constructed chamber. The walls were lined with ceramic tiles, and the floor was designed for easy drainage, presumably to wash away the remains of failed experiments after each test. The chamber had to be thoroughly cleaned, and the tiles often replaced after each test. So what was Die Glocke supposed to do? What was the machine? This is where the story enters truly speculative territory, as none of the discovered documentation discusses this in any great detail, and no ex-Nazi has come forward since Sporensburg and revealed the program's secrets. Some researchers suggest the bell was an attempt to manipulate gravity or create an anti-gravity field. Others propose it was experimenting with time dilation or even time travel. The program's codename hints at that. The theoretical basis for these claims often references the work of legitimate physicists from the era of the 1920s and 1930s. Scientists like Hermann Oberth and Burkhard Heim were known to have been exploring exotic physics concepts. Einstein's theories of relativity had opened up new possibilities for understanding space and time. So could the Nazis have been attempting to weaponize these theories? Utilizing this science to get an upper hand in the war, perhaps? Some proponents of the Nazi bell story point to a controversial physics concept called the torsion field, or spin field theory. In this theory, rotating masses, or electromagnetic fields, could produce gravitational effects. Thus, the counter-rotating cylinders filled with a heavy mercury-like substance could theoretically create such fields. You see, mercury has unique properties. It's an extremely dense, electrically conductive liquid metal, which has unusual quantum mechanical characteristics. Some researchers have suggested that Zerum-525 might have been a mercury isotope, or a developed mercury compound mixed with radioactive elements. I reiterate that this is pure speculation, however. Another theory suggests that the bell was a particle accelerator, or a device for studying high-energy physics. A particle accelerator, like the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, is a machine which uses electromagnetic fields to propel charged particles to near light speed. By doing so, they can smash the particles into targets or other particles. In doing so, they can create new particles for use in medicine, industrial manufacturing, and also weaponry. Some particle beam weapons now have practical applications as an anti-ballistic missile defense and detection system. But they've now been developed for use as so-called particle accelerator guns, ion cannons, proton beams, or lightning rays. As of publishing this episode in December 2025, it's known that China, France, Germany, the United Kingdom, Russia, and the United States all have particle accelerator weapons in use by their militaries. The 1940s saw the birth of particle physics as a field of research. The Nazis certainly had talented physicists, some of the best in the world at the time in actual fact. These physicists included several Nobel laureates who remained in Germany during the war. Following the war, Operation Paperclip moved around 1,600 German scientists, technicians, and engineers to the United States to work for the US defense and research sector. Many current mainstream physicists and historians are deeply skeptical of these theories proposed as the likely purpose of the bell. The energy requirements described for the bell seem impossibly high for the 1940s, and they state that the effects attributed to it, gravity manipulation and time dilation, remain beyond our capabilities now, 8 decades later. Yet believers counter these arguments. But what if the Nazis had made a breakthrough? What if they had stumbled upon some principle of physics that we still don't fully understand today? After all, they did create the world's first practical jet fighter and ballistic missile. They had developed the first helicopter, the first high-powered electron microscope, and various advancements in the field of medicine. Yes, much of the research was completed through illicit means such as slave labor and human experimentation, but the science and advancements were made. Much of their discoveries and science remains in use today. The United States space program was built on Nazi rocket science and overseen by ex-Nazi scientists, such as former members of the SS Wernher von Braun and Kurt Debus, who became director of NASA's Launch Operations Center, and Nazi science officer Bernhard Tessmann, who became deputy director of the test division at NASA. Perhaps the bell was another such leap forward, one that was lost when the facility was destroyed and the scientists disappeared. In fact, many of the underground research tunnels were said to have been destroyed or sealed off as the Nazis evacuated when the Red Army advanced. There is speculation that many of the scientists and technicians who worked on the Bell were sealed into the tunnels, forever destroying all knowledge of their scientific discoveries. But to understand the Nazi Bell story, we must examine the location where it was allegedly housed. The Wenceslas mine and the Dyrysa complex in the Al Mountains of Lower Silesia in Poland. Well, the Dyrysa project was very real. We have firm evidence of that and of the installation. Starting in 1943, the Nazis began constructing a massive underground complex in this region. The project employed thousands of forced labourers from nearby concentration camps, including prisoners from the now notorious Gross Rosen camp. The underground complex consists of several interconnected facilities, which were spread across the mountainous terrain. These include both above-ground and underground tunnels, reinforced concrete structures, and a large mysterious dodecagon foundation located above the Dyrysa facility, whose purpose remains unclear. I will add an image of this structure in the description of this episode. It still stands to this day. The structure, known locally as, quote, Muchalapka, or flytrap, is located near the village of Ludwikowice-Kowalskie in Silesia. It is a massive concrete dodecagon frame atop 12 concrete pillars, dozens of feet high. The structure sits on a hillside directly above the Wenceslas mine. The entire structure shows signs of exposure to extreme heat. Proponents of the Bell theory point to several unusual features of the flytrap. The concrete shows a greenish discoloration, which some claim is evidence of exposure to radiation or exotic energy fields. The ground around the structure is bare of vegetation, even to this day. Some sections look almost melted or vitrified. The structure's official name, from the Second World War, is not publicly known. Could the flytrap have been a test stand for the Bell? The structure's dimensions roughly match the described size of the device. Its isolated location, reinforced construction, and apparent exposure to extreme conditions make it an intriguing piece of physical evidence that supports the experiments that were conducted on the site. For balance, skeptics offer alternative explanations. They say the structure could have been a cooling tower for industrial equipment, a foundation for a water tower, or part of the complex's ventilation system. The heat damage and discoloration might simply be the result of the structure's destruction by retreating German forces in 1945. The scale of the construction and facility, however, is staggering. Some tunnels extend hundreds of meters deep into the mountains, and most remain unexplored since being sealed off at the end of the war. What we do know for certain is that the Nazis invested enormous resources into the Dyrysa complex. The official explanation is that it was intended as an underground headquarters for Hitler or as a secure facility for weapons production. It's worth mentioning that Hitler never visited the location in person. Much about the complex remains mysterious, and as I stated, large sections have never been explored. Every advanced weapons program needs brilliant minds behind it, and the Nazi Bell was supposedly no exception. According to various accounts, the project was headed by SS General Hans Kammler, one of the most mysterious and powerful figures in the Nazi war machine. Kammler was an engineer and architect. He was also SS Übergruppenführer, responsible for Nazi civil engineering projects and oversaw many of the Nazis' most ambitious construction projects. This included concentration camps and the underground facilities for the V2 rocket program. By 1945, he had become one of the most powerful men in the Third Reich, controlling vast resources and answering only directly to Hitler and Himmler. Hans Kammler's fate is one of the great mysteries of World War II. Whilst official records state that he died on the 9th of May 1945, with the circumstances being unclear, no body was ever definitively identified as his, and there are varying eyewitness reports as to when and how Kammler died. Some researchers believe he escaped to South America, or was captured by the Americans and given a new identity in exchange for his knowledge. Other scientists who were allegedly involved in the Bell Project included Dr. Walter Gerlach, a physicist who worked on German nuclear research, and the aforementioned Dr. Kurt Debus, who later became director of NASA's Kennedy Space Center. These men had worked on everything from rockets to chemical weapons at the facility. This much is known following post-war interrogations. But did some of them possess knowledge of the Bell? There are persistent rumors that some Bell-related research continued in the United States after the war. Perhaps influence in the development of aerospace technology or classified military projects in use today. However, no concrete evidence has ever emerged to support these claims. What is certain is that many of Nazi Germany's most advanced weapons programs did continue in some form after the war. The V-2 rocket became the foundation for both the American and Soviet space programs. Jet engine technology was rapidly adopted by all major powers. So if the Bell was real, it would have been among the most prized spoils of the war. By early 1945, Nazi Germany was collapsing. The Soviet Red Army was advancing from the east, and American and British forces were pushing from the west. The Nazis knew that their secret weapons facilities would soon be overrun. As Soviet forces approached Lower Silesia in early 1945, the SS took drastic action to prevent the Bell from falling into enemy hands. The device was allegedly dismantled and evacuated, possibly transported by a special convoy or even flown out by aircraft before evacuating. We know Hans Kammler oversaw a huge research evacuation by road as the Soviets grew closer. Was the Bell research part of this evacuation? We also know that the research that was removed as part of that evacuation ended up in American hands in the area of Linz on the 5th of May 1945. The Germans reportedly executed any and all witnesses from the site prior to the research being removed. Jakob Sporensberg, in his testimony, claimed that 62 scientists and technicians involved in the project were executed to maintain secrecy. They were allegedly killed by a special SS unit and buried in a mass grave near the Derisa installation. The facility itself was, for the most part, reportedly destroyed with explosive charges, which brought down many of the tunnels. Subterranean chambers were obliterated, and any remaining evidence of what had been conducted was sealed inside. Any remaining papers or documents were also burned. The ceramic tiles lining the test chamber were smashed and buried. When Soviet forces captured the region in May 1945, they found an abandoned and extensively damaged complex. If they discovered any clues about the Bell, then they kept them classified, much like the majority of intelligence that the Soviets seized, terrified that it would get into the hands of the British or Americans. Soviet intelligence files from this period remain largely sealed even to this day. But what happened to the Bell itself? This is where the story branches into multiple theories, each more speculative than the last. Some believe it was flown out to Norway, then transported by submarine to South America, ending up in a secret Nazi refuge in Argentina or Paraguay. Yes, this sounds like a stretch, I agree. Others claim that it was captured by American forces as part of a secret operation and taken to the United States, where it became the basis for classified aerospace projects. This outcome is more logically likely. A few researchers have even suggested that it was even successfully tested and used by the United States. But for what? A more mundane possibility, of course, is that the Bell never left Germany. Perhaps it was buried in one of the many unexplored tunnels of the Derisa complex, sealed away for 8 decades. Or perhaps it was simply destroyed, blown up by its creators to prevent capture, leaving only rumors and fragments of documents behind. This is also a likely outcome, Because if the bell truly was a wonder weapon, a super advanced device, then there would have been no way that the Nazis would want it to have fallen into enemy hands. Destroying it would have been far better than it being used against them, right? But while the Nazi bell makes for a compelling story, mainstream historians and scientists have raised serious doubts about its authenticity. So let's discuss the questions that this case throws up. The information about the Die Glocke project rests primarily on research journalist Igor Witkowski. It was him that saw the classified documents that evidenced the existence of Die Glocke in the 1990s. These documents have never been made public, and other researchers have been unable to verify their existence. Witkowski claims that he was shown them by an intelligence contact, but was not allowed to copy them. No other wartime documents mentions Die Glocke or Zerum 525. Given that millions of pages of Nazi documents were captured and declassified over the decades, the complete absence of corroborating documentation is suspicious. But then again, how many documents have you seen that discuss the existence of the United States Area 51 facility and the projects that go on there? Or have you ever seen documentation about the research at the United Kingdom's Porton Down facility? We know both of these facilities exist, but the UK and US keep them both so secretive that they aren't discussed in any known documentation. Could it be possible that the Third Reich treated Die Glocke and the research facility that housed it in the same way? Secondly, there are scientific questions that need answering. The supposed effects attributed to the bell, gravity manipulation, time dilation, the spontaneous decomposition of organic matter, all of these need further evidence. Scientifically, they are all possible, yes, but to this day, we don't, at least officially, know how to master this science. Whilst Nazi scientists were talented, they were working with 1940s technology. The ceramic tiles that lined the bell chamber and showed unusual damage could have been ordinary industrial tiles from any facility. The mysterious Zerum 525 has never been identified or explained again, at least not officially. No chemical or isotope matches the description, at least not any that are in the public domain. Some researchers have suggested that the Nazi bell is essentially a modern myth, a fusion of various real Nazi projects conflated with post-war UFO mythology. The description of the bell shares similarities with popular depictions of flying saucers that emerged in the 1950s and 1960s. And finally, there is the question of motive. Why would the Nazis invest massive resources in such an exotic and unproven technology when they desperately needed conventional weapons? By 1943, Germany was in desperate need of tanks, aircraft, and ammunition, not experimental physics projects with no clear military application. But, despite these glaring issues, the bell story persists. Perhaps because it touches on something deeper. Our fascination with lost technology, secret history, and the idea that there might be more to the past than we've been told. But it also adds to the mythology of the Nazis as a distant and terrifying foe, an enemy the world could unite behind, an ultimate evil. But whether real or mythical, the Nazi bell has left an indelible mark on popular culture and alternative history since Witkowski's book was published in 2000. Die Glocke has featured in countless documentaries, books, video games, and movies. The bell appears in television shows, particularly those on cable channels devoted to mysteries and conspiracies. They have produced numerous documentaries about the Nazi bell. These programs typically present the story as an unsolved mystery, interviewing believers and skeptics and visiting the actual sites of the research facility in Poland. The sites themselves have become tourist attractions. The Owl Mountains and the Derisa Complex draw visitors interested in Second World War history, urban explorers, and mysterious Nazi projects. Local guides offer tours of the tunnels and tell stories about the Bell experiments. The bell has also sparked serious research by some investigators and journalists. Other, more mainstream academics generally dismiss the story, but conduct no research to counter the research that supports the history surrounding the experiments that went on at the Owl Mountains. Skeptics offer more dismissal due to their reluctance to believe. A small community of researchers continue to dig through archives, interview witnesses, and explore the physical site, looking for evidence. Some researchers have connected the bell to UFO phenomena, suggesting that if the device was real, it might have been an early attempt at anti-gravity propulsion. They point to reports of unusual flying objects seen over Germany in the final months of the war, and to post-war UFO sightings in the United States that some claim may have actually been tests or captured Nazi technology. The story has even influenced discussions about current military technology. When the US government acknowledged the existence of UFO encounters by military personnel in recent years, some immediately speculated about connections to recovered Nazi technology, like the bell. So, what are we to make of the Nazi bell? Do you believe in the details uncovered, and that Nazi scientists were testing something more advanced than we can imagine? Or do you think the researchers are jumping to fantastic conclusions based on minimal information and evidence? After examining the evidence, the testimonies, and the theories, we're left with more questions than answers, sure. But isn't that always the case for the subjects that we discuss on this podcast? For believers, the bell represents one of history's great cover-ups, proof that the Nazis were far more advanced than we have been told, and that powerful secrets remain buried in classified files or hidden in unexplored tunnels and facilities. Are these patterns to be seen in the evidence? The real construction projects, the missing scientists, the unusual structures, and the persistent rumors that have endured for decades? There's no smoke without fire, after all. Is this story smoldering quietly in the darkness? For skeptics, it's a cautionary tale about how legends and conspiracies are born. They see a story built on questionable sources, amplified by our fascination with Nazi mysteries, and shaped by the entertainment industry into something more exciting than the prosaic reality of a defeated regime destroying evidence of ordinary war crimes and failed weapons programs. The story builds the mystical image of an old enemy, but fails to acknowledge that they were defeated on a massive scale and that they no longer pose a threat to freedom, despite lurking in our collective nightmares. Perhaps the truth lies somewhere in between. Maybe there was a project called Die Glocke, perhaps a conventional physics experiment or weapons test that took on legendary proportions through a combination of secrecy. Maybe wartime propaganda and post-war mythologizing created a snowball effect and gave the legend more credence than reality supported. What we can say with certainty is that the Nazi regime did pursue revolutionary weapons technology. They did construct massive underground complexes. They did conduct horrific experiments on prisoners and utilize slave labor. They did murder millions of innocent people and followed a belief in the extraordinary. They did have brilliant scientists working on projects that pushed the boundaries of contemporary science, and they were indeed far more advanced than many other nations at that time. But whether the Nazi bell was a genuine breakthrough in physics, a failed experiment, or simply a legend that emerged from the chaos of the war's end, it serves as a reminder of a dark chapter in human history and our endless fascination with the mysteries from that period. The Nazi bell remains one of World War II's most intriguing enigmas, and until new evidence emerges, a document in a forgotten archive, a deathbed confession, or a discovery within those unexplored tunnels, then Die Glocke will continue to lurk in that grey zone between history and legend. What do you believe? Is this a case of science or speculation? Let us know your thoughts in the comments or send us a DM. We love hearing from you guys. Also, if you haven't already done so, head over to our Patreon and join up for a wealth of extra content. It's just $2. You can't even get a cup of coffee for that low price these days. Head to www.patreon.com/deadsouls. According to Patrick Keeger, writing in the National Geographic, Die Glocke has become a, quote, popular subject of speculation, and a following similar to science fiction fandom exists around it and other alleged Nazi miracle weapons, or Wunderwaffen. Mainstream reviewers, such as former aerospace scientist David Mithra, expresses skepticism that such a device ever actually existed. But since it was first described by Igor Witkowski, it has later been popularized in further research by military journalist and author Nick Cook, as well as the investigative writer Joseph P. Farrell. Farrell, who has publicly associated it with Nazi occultism, anti-gravity, and free energy research. The truth, as always, is still out there, waiting to be discovered. Or perhaps the truth was destroyed in 1945, and all that remains are echoes, rumors, and whispers of a weapon of mass destruction that may never have existed at all. Good night, everyone.